Hello and welcome to the first comics podcast of the calendar year 2021, version 2.0. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, and joined this week by a slightly reduced cast. It's the OGs. Chad and Alex are here. Say hello to the audience, Chad and Alex.
Hello. I'm Chad. This is my buddy.
Alex.
Yay. And Emily, regretfully, is out sick this week, so we are postponing the big end of the year comic book show wrap up. So we will do that next week. And in the meantime, we are here to fill in the gaps with some content. Y'all got
having a cold one with the boys.
Hell yeah. I've got a cold one. It's a no calorie, no sugar, no alcohol vitamin water.
You suck.
Damn. I got some tea.
I had a cider earlier and I was thinking about having another one, but then this was easier.
Bourbon and ice, baby.
Nice. Well, we're all drinking something, and we're here to talk about stuff. Chad, Alex, I have spent the last week since we last recorded. I've watched every piece of live action Star Wars content in the last 7 days.
Oh, so that's why you haven't been online in the Discord. I mean, you've been online, but I haven't been gaming.
No, I've been watching every Star Wars movie. I rewatched The Mandalorian, all with my grandpa. So I've been doing that.
Does Grandpa John Luke have normie tastes in Star Wars?
He just likes everything.
Good for him.
Refreshing. He's more of a star. Although I will say.
Where did you go wrong?
I will say, on revisiting things, it's basically just Rogue One and Rise of Skywalker that I think are bad.
That's
so,
a change.
Solo, that movie has a lot of problems, but I don't know, man. That movie's fun. That movie's got a great first act. And honestly, the rest of the movie isn't as bad as I remembered it being. It's good. Like, I don't think it needed to be made, but it's fun. First season of The Mandalorian, actually, I can't believe I'm saying this.
Uh-oh.
Oh my gosh. All right, clip this. We're not on Twitch.
Fine. It's totally fine.
Wow. It is totally fine.
Actually think watching it all in sequence is the preferable way to do it. Because watching it all back to back to back, I'm like, oh yeah, this is like, there's some weird pacing here. It takes a little while to find its identity, but it's fine. I'm enjoying myself. Just taking a bit of a step back, and honestly, like, the first season, it, like, thematically, it actually landed for me a little bit more this time around. I thought, and it's not, you know, doing anything particularly, but like the idea of, like, you know, all of these people who are sort of like outcasts coming together. It's like, it's one of those stories, and it's okay at that. I wish it was a little better, but it's not that bad. Season two, is the same as I thought it was, but you know, it was nice to be like, oh, okay, this is fine. It's not amazing, but it's enjoyable. I had a good time with it. And of course the six mainline movies, of course, I love.
I'm kind of surprised you like the prequels at all.
I love the prequels.
I like The Phantom Menace.
Oh, the prequels.
And then the
lovely.
Other two suck.
And
oh, so you officially like more Star Wars movies than I do now.
I adore the prequels. I cry at the end of Revenge of the Sith. It is such an emotional thing. I think in a lot of ways I like the idea of the prequels a lot more than I like the execution of the prequels, because I'm not there's a lot of things about them that I'm not gonna defend. Like, George Lucas should have just used practical effects. He didn't need to try to invent a whole new way to do filmmaking. But they're
he's not the Wachowskis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, I actually think that's fair. I think that, like, for all the things I dislike about Speed Racer, like, at least the vision is coherent. And I think, you know, they clearly.
R2-D2 flying around in that one movie is awful.
Attack of the Clones? Yeah, it's really
Attack
bad.
Attack of the Clones, yeah.
That whole sequence, the droid factory sequence, is rough, for sure. But
like, in The Phantom Menace, like, you're underwater and you see all the creatures, and it's not bad.
The lighting helps that one. Although, the weird thing about The Phantom Menace when they go underwater is they, like, at the beginning of the scene, they're very clearly standing, like, at a pond, like, not a large pond, but apparently the pond extends for miles and miles and miles underwater.
The but Force is anyway, very powerful.
I've watched a lot of Star Wars. I enjoy it. I love, like,
wow,
you know, all of the Obi-Wan stuff and Attack of the Clones, like the noir stuff, from everything from, you know, the Zam Wessel chase to him going to Kamino. I love that. The scene with Dooku on Geonosis is amazing. Christopher Lee is, you know, just fucking for that role. It really, as much as I like what they've done with Darth Maul in the Clone Wars, it really makes you wish that they had just started building Count Dooku, like, as a character in Phantom Menace, so that you weren't left with, like, a lot of weird question marks in Attack of the Clones.
Sure.
Yeah. I think I like Attack of the Clones more than the first one. And not that I don't like the first one, but, like, it's just, I mean, you have the Obi-Wan stuff, and then the Anakin stuff is just so funny, yeah, and the conversations, and, like, the...
It's so bad!
But it's, like, enjoyable bad. It's, like, there's like, an earnestness to it, and there's like, nothing like it in a strange way.
That kind of, like, the dialogue, I won't deny, is really bad. It almost works in the context of, you know, him being, of Anakin being a person who, like, it was raised from a young age at the, like, this is just to me, like, yeah, Jedi probably are kind of like that. Like, he has no idea how to really court somebody or engage with somebody or explain, like, how he feels to other people just because of the way he was raised. And so it almost works, but I'm not going to sit here and, like, really defend the Naboo scenes or anything, where he talks about, like,
Padme should have run.
Yeah, like, where he's like, yeah, I think that one person should just, like, where he, like, basically just tells them, like, yeah, I'm a fascist, I'm going to become a dictator someday.
Foreshadowing.
But I'm, like,
it's foreshadowing because he's got the Force.
Foreshadowing. Oh,
that's great. But it's, yeah, I will defend the prequels. Revenge of the Sith, I think, standalone is a good movie. I think when you watch Clone Wars, it gets a lot better. Rogue One, man, that movie is indefensible. That movie is indefensible.
On your revisit, was there a time when you were like, oh, I'm really into this plight of Jim Erso?
I was really into it when Saw Gerrera was on screen, and that's about it. Because I think Forrest Whitaker's performance is just totally batshit, and I wish that he had more screen time because he carries those scenes in a way that, like, I will say, it made me a little bit more excited for, like, the Cassian show, even though I think, like, Cassian's character is really muddled in that movie. Like, I love Diego Luna. Diego Luna is very charismatic, but they really can't decide if, like, because it's a Disney movie, they can't really they don't know how to toe the line between, like, Cassian being a character that kids can look up to and buy action figures of, and Cassian actually being the character that they bill him as, which is this, like, morally gray, you know, like, he's doing things for a good cause, but he's, you know, he's assassinating people, and, you know, he doing things that are morally things that you wouldn't, you know, see in a protagonist a lot of the times, and they can't really do that. So his arc ends up being a total, like, just a disaster almost as a result. But Diego Luna is a great actor. I mean, Riz Ahmed is also fantastic in that movie. So it has its moments. I think, like, as a cohesive movie, it's indefensible because it's not.
Hallway scene?
We've talked about the hallway scene a lot, but the movie, that's the only one that I was like, this shit still sucks. Well, and Rise of Skywalker, but...
See, I think Rise of Skywalker is okay.
Yeah.
It's got lots of problems. It is a flawed movie.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like a point A to point B to point C adventure. It's pretty, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
The ending is really hype. Like, I like Kylo Ren a lot in it.
So do I. See, but that's
watching at least once.
See, well, yeah, well, yeah, okay. I think the thing is that, like, I love Kylo Ren as a character, and I feel like that movie just doesn't do enough with Kylo Ren as a character. But I almost wish that there was a point at the beginning where, because the first time I watched it, you know, that, like, beginning, which is basically like a montage, where I'm just like, the first time, the Mustafar stuff to the, you know, the light speed skipping, basically up to the point where Poe and Finn, to the first Rey scene, basically. But there was a moment where I was like, I wish the movie was just like this the whole time. And the first time I saw it, I'm like, this pacing is really bad. But I would have loved to see that movie exists as like a montage building to the conclusion where you have all those, all the ships showing up. Because I think that that would be way more exciting if it's like, if the movie was less, you know, point A to point B to point C adventure, which like Chad says, it as that kind of movie, it's fine, it's whatever. But I almost wish that it was like this total like scattershot of scenes of people throughout the galaxy and then them coming together at the end and you see all of their ships or whatever at the end and not even like telling full stories with them, but just like these snippets that you like doing like a sort of like montage, totally like montage style film. Obviously Disney would never go for something like that because you can't sell that to the
I could see them doing like a, I don't know, I can see them doing like an animated one of that.
Sure.
Or like
absolutely. In realms where you're not spending billions of dollars, absolutely you could probably maybe do something like that. But
yeah, like, you know, I guess like as a, you know, point A to point B to point C adventure movie, it's like fun. But it's just like in the context of Star Wars, is like a, let's say a movie story. It's just like,
that's the problem. Is it doesn't feel like that's not really what Star Wars movies are. They're not like movies that are built around, like they're not movies. There's a term for this that I'm blanking on, but they're not movies where it's like, oh, go find the piece of the relic. And then that will lead you to the next piece of the relic. You know, that's not, Star Wars movies aren't like that. They're not about finding the, finding the MacGuffins, but even Indiana Jones isn't like about finding the MacGuffins, right? Like,
no, like he's more, well,
the plotting doesn't revolve, but like the goal is like to find the arc, but the plotting isn't like, you'll go find the arc so that you can unlock the secrets, right? It's the motivation is different. The motivation isn't go find the arc so you can unlock the final boss sequence, which Rise of Skywalker is like,
also like Nazis.
Oh, we have to go find the knife, so that we can find the holocron that gets us to Exegol, so that we can, you know, it's very like that kind of plotting. Like the motivation is just like, we have to do this so we can do the next thing, so we can do the next thing, so we can beat the final boss. And that's like not bad.
It's like a video game, but made into a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Which is what a lot of like the Marvel movies feel like. It's what a lot of like big budget movies feel like, because it's easy plotting and it's like, it's easy to follow. And if you fill in the gaps well enough, you can make enjoyable movies out of it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I'd say with the Marvel films, what they excel at, they pride themselves on the point A to point B, but it's the banter between where they're like, hey, you know, like there are character moments and you're like, hey, if you like this kind of stuff, it's wonderful.
And the movies where that works, like Iron Man 3, and it's different movies, different people, but for me, it's like Iron Man 3 is the movie where that stuff works. And I love that movie, right? You know, it's the movies where the rest of that stuff doesn't land for me that I think are really bad and generic, but you know, it works for a lot of people, obviously. Which doesn't
mean
has
it been not having like Marvel movies for a year,
dude? I know, but you know what, baby? Next year there's a new Marvel movie every week. You think I'm joking? But WandaVision starts January 15th, and there's an episode of that every week until the middle of March. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, okay.
But after that, the Falcon TV show starts, and there's an episode every week of that until May. And on the day after it ends in May is the day that Black Widow comes out. So I'm not joking when I say that there is a new piece of MCU material to consume every single week through May this year.
That's a lot.
I'm not going to watch any of it.
You know what? I think I'm done. I think I can safely just be like, you know, I don't like, at least when they were in movie theaters, there was a degree of spectacle that was like, you know, I went and saw the Spider-Man movie, and it was, I didn't really like it, but I enjoyed my time.
There was popped corn.
I will say, I'm done with Marvel, but when Guardians of the Galaxy 3 inevitably comes out, I will go see that one, and I hope it's better than 2, but if it's not, I guess shame on me.
It is,
Suicide Squad, James Gunn's doing his thing. I don't know.
It's weird to think that
DC is more exciting.
It's weird to think that I'm more excited about the future of DC movies than.
Well, I don't know what they're going to send my way is the thing. Whereas I know what the next Marvel movie is going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like they spent, I don't know, like they made it very clear they were going away from Zack Snyder's vision of the universe, and then they give him like $100 million dollars in
reach. I'm excited for that because like, it's exactly what Chet said. I have no idea what that fucking madman is going to make, dude.
I don't know. And like Ray Fisher was like, yeah, like only one of my things that I shot was in the final film. And I'm like, man, this is just going to be a completely different movie. And it's going to suck. And
Maybe Zack Snyder has spent his career making bad movies so that he can make one just like masterpiece. I don't believe that, but
if the Snyder cut is a
Dude, what if the Snyder cut is just like a stone cold? You know,
I don't hate Zack Snyder as a director, though.
Yeah.
Like, I like 300 a lot.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's like a dumb machismo, violent film.
His take on like superheroes, like inherently he's like, for me there's a big clash where I'm like, oh, you know, like superheroes and hope and shit, and he's just like, yeah, Junkie XL, let's go, let's make a soundtrack, and I'm like, all right,
yeah,
like he's a very stylistic director.
Ideologically,
like,
there,
I don't need a two and a half hour like.
Yeah, ideologically, there's not something that like there's something that doesn't work necessarily.
Do you guys see Sucker Punch?
Yeah, I loved Sucker Punch when I was 13. Mostly because what's her name is wearing Emily Browning wears very revealing clothing throughout that entire movie, which is why I liked it a lot when I was that age. But it's not a movie that I would say like now. Oscar Isaac is in it.
That movie was bad.
Yeah. it is one of those movies that I think when you're young, it's like one of those movies that's like okay to like when you're young, and like it's okay to think that movie is it's kind of like a Christopher Nolan movie, but not as good. In that, like, if you like that movie until you're like 15, it's fine. But after that, you gotta realize that the ending is not that deep. It's not actually telling you anything.
It's scary revisiting things from your childhood because you're like, I might hate this now. Is this a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, it's scary, but it's also, like, I don't know, it's kind of neat to know. Like, when we read Why the Last Man this year, I was genuinely like, this is a fantastic series. And I read it, and we all read it, and it's like, wow, this is so dated. And it's kind of nice to be, like, as a person, I have, like, grown. Not necessarily in a good way, but kind of reading that, I would say, in a good way, because I'm like, oh, there's a lot of...
Well, it's just crazy to see how much an author's grown, right? Like, going from that to Saga, you're like, oh, holy shit, this is the same person?
And it's wild because there's 10 years of 10 years of comics that he wrote between Y and Saga.
I wonder if the end of Y, like, I wonder if the series gets better because I was going to reread it. Ended up getting through like 3 or 4 trades, and it was like there were times where I was like, oh, this is like the Brian K. Vaughan I like. This is better, and then I was like, no.
I mean, Brian K. Vaughan, I mean, Paper Girls is fantastic also. So, like, clearly his contemporary output, at least, is really good. But even some of his stuff from that era I like. Like, I read Pride of Baghdad, like, within the last couple years, like, revisited it. Mm-hmm. And that's really good. But that's also a very different book than Why the Last Man. Like, Why the Last Man is, like, a very of its time in a lot, like... In that it's like post-apocalyptic fiction that is like heavily like gender is like an intrinsic part of it, and there's just like a lot of outdated modes of like thinking about that, and also like, you know, that book started probably like within like when did it start like to launch, like did that book launch like pre 9/11, and then
no it was early, so
like
2000,
but like it was either pre 9/11 or like in the like, wake of
it was definitely like in the fall,
definitely right, like, that is the stuff that makes people go a little psycho, you know? I'm serious. Like, there's so many writers that, like, Frank Miller lost it after 9/11, clearly. Garth Ennis wrote The Boys, and that shit is, like, very, like, yeah, dude, that guy was dealing with some 9/11 shit. You know, and there are, like, those kinds of big events that happen, and, like, it's going to impact the way that people write and write about social issues and write about political issues and
for sure
engage with those things in their books.
It's interesting, though, because, like, you know, like, as a person, you hope that you grow as you go on, but it's also, like, the fact that, like you guys said, you know, Saga's great, Pride of Baghdad's good. It's, like, authors can, like, grow, but, like, also just because they wrote one thing that was weird or, like, doesn't hold up doesn't mean everything. It's a cool...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a cool thing when you're, like, hey, you know, authors are people, too, who, like, go through shit, and there's no guarantee that they're going to be consistent. Like, I don't know, like, Scott Snyder's written things I've liked, but, like, would I call him a good writer now? Like, no. So it's a weird I don't know, but then Scott Snyder could release a great comic. I don't
know. He did. What was that Batman book that we all loved? Like at the like, I think it came out like the end of 2019. End of 2019.
Is that the one where Joker's head was in a jar?
With Joker's head in a jar. Yeah,
that one was great.
Was it Last Night?
Yeah, Last Night on Earth. You know that, like, it can definitely happen. And it's also the thing where, like, you know, things that someone makes, you know, that came out 15, 20 years ago aren't in, you know. I don't necessarily think that all the people who liked Why the Last Man at the time that it was coming out were wrong. It's just that, like, when you revisit, although maybe they were, but, like, when you revisit, like, I if like a lot of the things that we disliked about it were just, it was a lot of, like, its handling of social issues that was really awkward and oftentimes harmful and bad, that, like, at the time, like, if we were 23 and 24 and 30 at the time in 2002 or whenever Why the Last Man launched, like, we might have liked it. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that Alex and I liked it when we were, like, in our teens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting. The one thing that's true is that everyone is objectively wrong for liking Tom King's Bat.
There are at least 8 good issues of that run.
Yeah, that run of, like, 80.
Hey, 10%. Okay, like, I don't know. If you're a comic book writer and 10% of your stuff's fantastic, well, no, okay, it's not fantastic. There was at least one fantastic issue, though.
Not to pivot too far, but actually, you know, there's some ties here, because I was watching just random episodes of The Simpsons earlier, which is maybe the inverse, where it's like, just because someone did something good doesn't mean that they'll continue to do that throughout their career. I just was, like, I put on like some episodes of season 7, and I'd never seen them before, like. Or at least I don't remember seeing them. There's this, like, really fucking good episode in season 7 where George Bush moves in, H.W. Bush, the first one. He moves into, like, a house across from them, and the whole episode is basically, essentially, it's Homer and Bart just bullying him until he leaves the neighborhood. It's amazing. It's so good, and I had no idea that was something that, like, The Simpsons had in their repertoire, because, like, they, like literally Homer gets in a fist fight with him at the end and just, like, starts pummeling him. It's fantastic. Like, I was just watching it and just, like, just genuinely laughing at a lot of scenes. There's a scene where, like, Bart goes over to his garage and shreds his memoirs, which is great. I don't know. I've always, like, liked The Simpsons, but I was watching a couple episodes today, and I just, like, hit a string, I guess, of, like, I think 3 in a row. Because the one after that is the one where, and this one I think I had seen before, where Marge stumbles upon a Chanel dress for, like, or a Chanel suit that's, like, $70 or something in a thrift store, and she buys it, and, like, she just runs into some, and, like, everybody just, like, she wears it out to, like, the gas station, and people just assume that she's, like, you know, some highfalutin, like, high society class person. And they, like, invite the Simpson family to like, the country club. And it's just about, like, you know, all the, like, hijinks that ensue from them. Like, you know, these very, like, working class people. And in some way, who in a lot of ways, like, is outdated because they have it a lot better than a lot of working class people do now. But, you know, being at a country club with wealthy people. And trying to, and of course the moral at the end is, you know, that you don't want to fit in with those people, which is also fantastic. That, like, those aren't the kinds, you don't want to be one of them, you don't want to become one of them. But the episode is hilarious. Like, there's, and it's just like, oh man, there are some real, that show has some, like, really ingenious moments.
It's remarkable how, like, well they tell grounded stories in the first, like, 12 seasons, where it's, like, not, like, the situations themselves aren't too crazy. It's the people that are, like, in it that are kind of, like, it's wonderfully grounded. It's, like, it's almost believable. You're like, yeah, you know, this guy could exist and these people could exist, and it's really good. When my family got Disney Plus, I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch The Simpsons, and I'm on season 24 now.
Jesus.
And it's rough in the middle, and now, I don't know, around season 23, I'm like, oh, this is starting to get funny, and I'm not sure if it's some sort of, like, Stockholm syndrome thing. Cause I'm gonna
Did
watch
you just
all,
go
no
through
what.
It all sequentially? Holy
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I just watched it in order. Yeah. There were some rough times.
I imagine. But... I like the Lego episode,
like, there was a
in
joke.
Season, like, 18 or something.
Oh, good old Lego and The Simpsons. But, like, there was a joke in, like, an episode where it was these, like, hipsters moved to town, And Homer's trying to like fit in with them, but he obviously can't. And then there's a line where he's like, "I only know David Cross from the Chipmunks movie." And I don't know, that line was just, it was just wonderful. And I remember watching the Chipmunks movie and seeing David Cross in it, and it was like, yeah.
Who does he play?
That's wonderful. He plays the bad guy.
Okay, yeah. In the
he's
first
like
one,
evil manager guy. Yes, yes. Not the Squeakquel. We don't talk about the Squeakquel. But I actually watched Diary of a Wimpy Kid the movie like at 3 a.m. on New Year's Day.
Nice.
Because my brother was there and I was there. And we were watching, and it's actually a funny movie. And I don't know. I don't know how to deal with it.
Huh, so. That's interesting.
Yes,
Dad. How have you spent your holidays?
I've been really busy. I've been working on the new book. I've been hanging out with the family. I've been drinking too much. Played some ping pong the other day. It's been just a really, really nice 4-day weekend. I got one more day off too. Yeah, tomorrow's Sunday. I get to go grocery shopping. I might go to the bookstore. I haven't been to a bookstore in a while.
Dude, I feel that. I really want to go to... There's a great bookstore downtown here that I want to go to, but I just have been on a really good streak of like not being outside, not going out at all. And I kind of want to maintain that, but I would also love to go to a bookstore.
So is everything just open everywhere for you?
Not everything.
Pretty much.
Like most everything is open, but there's a couple like local places, like the record store that I go to is like pickup only. There's some places, and they were open for a long time, but you know, but most things now are open. There was a period where everything got closed down again, but then can't leave everything closed for holiday shopping because economy has to go brr. So
brr.
I had a Warhammer mishap because my brother got me a set of Warhammer figures for Christmas, and I've been putting them together, and it involved getting a little too close to my monitor with a hobby knife.
Did you determine that's what happened?
I don't know how else that could have happened.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of thing that there's only so many things you can do it.
Admittedly, when I emailed them, because my monitor's under warranty, I did blame the cat in the email. Because the warranty doesn't cover, like, accidental knife to screen, apparently. And it's like, well, what about Cat Claw? Because he's an asshole, like, you can believe this.
Yeah.
It's not that bad. It's not a very deep scratch. Like, I've played video games yet, and it's fine, and I've gotten work done. It's just annoying because it's a new monitor, and it was really expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, having your new technology get kind of fucked up is always a bummer.
I'm also covered in super glue in my hands. I've been like, I can't tell if it's dead skin to chew off or super glue, and when I bite it, I can taste the difference, and the super glue is not as good.
Oh, that is such a bad feeling.
Yeah. There's no other way of knowing. It's just...
Oh!
That'd be a fun game.
You know what? Chad mentioned video games. You know,
okay.
Now that I have a Switch, we can finally do that thing that we were saying we were going to do like 100 episodes ago and play Smash. I would have to...
I kick your ass in Smash.
I would have to buy Smash, but...
Yeah. Chad is going to kick our ass.
My $600 stimulus check came in yesterday.
Oh, shit.
I have not gotten mine yet. Wow.
Yeah.
I want a new mattress. I feel like that should be the sane thing I get, because mine is like going on 9 years old.
That would be a very fitting, I don't know, like,
that would be like, very characteristic of you these days.
I also need a new computer.
But it's also very useful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither of these things are fun.
I feel like a new mattress is actually kind of fun. Like,
oh, hell yeah.
Probably, like,
you're going to sleep so much better.
The experience of, like, sleeping on a new mattress, especially... If you get like a nice new mattress, that's got to be like it top 10, you know, enjoyable things you can do with household appliances
in a lifetime.
I don't know. I feel like that's like it's maybe not fun, but I feel like that would be like a really gratifying thing.
I feel like it's satisfying. Yeah, like in the not even in the long run, just like hey, and a good night.
Guys, I got a coffee maker for Christmas, and I've used it like every day since I got it, and I'm just so happy. Like, my life has been improved tenfold having good coffee every day. Like, multiple cups of coffee. I've been trying to lean back on the coffee. That one ENT was like, you drink too much coffee. It's very bad for your throat. You should not do that. And it's like, yeah, but it's either that or alcohol. Like, which one's worse for me, bro? Yeah.
Just posing the question. I'm asking questions.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's nice. Yeah. I mean... I probably haven't gotten as much use out of my Ultimate Collector Series Millennium Falcon, but I look at it every day and it fills me with joy.
I disagree. I think.
Oh yeah, I finished it on Tuesday, I think, and Well, actually, the other thing that happened is that I fucked up my leg on because I was on a walk with my dad, and it's all the sidewalks and shit are frozen, and I slipped and like really fucked my knee pretty badly.
Oh man, that sucks.
So I had a hard time getting around, so I had to have. And it's actually like really it's normal now. So which thank goodness because if it was still hurting now, I was probably in for an expensive doctor's bill.
There goes that stimulus check.
Exactly. But at the time, I had to have my parents or my dad bring it downstairs for me. But my parents, despite being the people who bought it for me, were just like in awe of the size of it the whole time. Like I showed it to them. I brought up my like the other Millennium Falcon that I have, like the play scale Millennium Falcon. And they just looked at it and were – and my grandpa was basically sitting there the whole time that I was building it because I was building it while we were watching Star Wars and was just amazed the whole time. Which is like, which is awesome because it was like, it just like seeing like people who are like, oh, wow, holy shit, that is a thing.
Yeah, yeah. You sent the picture of the comparison in the chat, and it was just like one of those pictures where it's like, holy shit, that's like, and it's like the little details of how the bigger one's just like shaped better. Oh, yeah. Got like it
doesn't
looks
have like
the actual
gaps
thing
in between the panels. Yeah.
Like that is so cool. I don't know where you go from here. I mean, when I was like, oh, Lego Star Wars, it was like the Death Star, even though I never really bought Lego Star Wars, but I would always go to the Lego store and I saw that Death Star and I was like, oh, this is the Holy Grail.
The Death Star is still on the list.
I mean, that is just such a nicer set.
Well, there's other stuff on the list, but it's like none of that, you know, there's the Star Destroyer and the Mos Eisley Cantina that they have out now, but you know, that is kind of the Falcon is kind of the pinnacle. Like I could get that and be like, I'm done buying. Like I won't be because my brain is broken. But
I miss. Yeah. I had a lot of really cool Lego sets when I was younger. And there were like, you know, some of the underwater stuff with like the wheels and there's a really cool alien spaceship I had. And I know I was talking to my mom the other day because she's like, anything you didn't bring with you, we can get rid of it to some degree, right? And I was like, yeah, I mean. It's fine. A lot of that stuff is just, it's crap we had when we were kids. Cause she's like, I might start putting those Lego sets together when I retire and then like bagging them up and selling them or just giving them to Goodwill or something, getting rid of them. And I'm just like, you should, but there might be like two sets I would want to keep when I think about it, but I don't know how I would display those. Like I don't have like a good spot for them. And it's just, it's not really conducive to the style I've kind of built for my house.
Yeah, it can be tough, especially because, like, by nature of it, like, the cooler sets are the bigger ones, and they take up a lot of space. But
where are you keeping your Falcon?
It's on a coffee table. there's a coffee table in the basement that it's – and my room is in the basement, and it's just sitting – and nobody, like, really – well, nobody uses the coffee table, really, down here. But that's where it's sitting. It would fit on my, like, I don't know, Chad, if you've seen it, but Alex, you definitely have. Like, I have, like, a big Lego shelf, and there's, like, a spot for it where it would fit on there, but I just, like, having it out and, like, in the open is nice. But it's definitely the kind of thing where it's, like, if/when I move back to DC, or, like, you know, inevitably I move back into my own old place, I'm probably just leaving it here. Which is what I do with most of my Lego.
You need to like lift it up and make whooshing sounds as you go into
this is not a set that you can lift up and make whooshing sounds. It's not one of those.
That's fair.
But, you know, I mean, hey, here's the nice thing, Chad, about your old Legos. They're probably, like, assuming all the pieces are there, probably worth like a decent chunk of money. If you were to sell them.
Yeah, that's something we talked about too. But we also have like Travis's kids will eventually be old enough to maybe enjoy building and playing with Legos, and so there's a certain level of like. Or my neighbor who I play ping pong with, he's got a grandson who is almost of the age to really enjoy like the intricate Lego sets. We'd probably give some of them away just to be like, hey, let's let the next generation have fun with these.
That's the thing for me is that I've talked about this before, but like inevitably, like if I have kids or my sister has kids or, you know, friends of my parents who I know have kids or whatever, like these are things that eventually I will probably just like give away or have in my house for like them to play with or whatever. There is a time when they will eventually stop being display pieces, which is all they are right now. And even though like there are some that like are worth money, I could sell them for like a decent chunk of change, it's like I don't want to sell these to some collector. I would rather have somebody enjoy them and play with them in the way that I did when I was younger.
Yeah, they're toys.
And I don't want to like force them on like someone's kids or whatever, but like I don't want to be like, you're going to like if I ever have kids, I want to be like, you're going to have like Legos or you're not my child or whatever. But like, I want them to like be able to like enjoy it in the way that I did, because it's something that like has throughout my life brought me a lot of joy. Also, this picture that you sent, Chad, this is like the era of Lego space that is just like next level, looks fantastic. Fucking amazing.
I love the neon green, yellow tint on the windshield. Like, oh, it's just...
I know I have all the pieces for that, and for the people listening, it's that the Interstellar Starfighter, which I think was made in the 90s or maybe... Oh, 1997.
No, this is 90s, yep.
Oh, this definitely is
90s. This is like before I was into Lego. These are the sets that like I like envy people for having.
And I was old enough and my parents were affluent enough to be like, no, we can get our kids these. And
yeah,
I remember like I loved this set so much. I played with this hard because we had all these other Lego sets, but this was the cool one, right? So it could fly around like, oh, it's going to fly over the city and they're going to drop bombs, you know, just being dumb and having a glorious time. And it is a really cool spaceship. Like it's kind of busy. It's very weirdly Star Trek-y with a circular front end, but.
Yeah,
it's also it feels like a lot of guns on it. Like
it feels like it has that like Image and Marvel Comics like 90s aesthetic, but actually, in the sense that it's busy and has a lot of guns, but like actually kind of like makes that aesthetic work and look kind of cool. That's awesome. And that's the thing is like you want other people to have those experiences with toys.
Then here's the other one.
Right.
It's an underwater set. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that is awesome.
The neon another like giant neon green.
This is
it even has eyes. Oh man.
This is 2162. Yeah, this is awesome.
Also 1997.
Yeah.
It's a good year for Lego.
It was cool too, because it had a little compass on it that like worked. And so when you drove it around on the ground, the compass would like point. And it's And then it has this drill out front, but I think you could replace that with other like drills that you made. And so you could be like, oh, we're gonna drill the monster now, so we're gonna put the propeller one up front to really fuck it up.
Oh, that is
those sets are like, and they're the problem with them like visually is like they look cool and they're nostalgic, but like they're not really display pieces. Like they're very bulky, they're chunky, they're very two tone in color, and so. I don't know what I would do with it.
They're not as much like, because most of what I have is like Star Wars stuff, which just ends up being, you know, Star Wars display pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have great memories.
Like, in terms of play value, that's.
But yeah, like, but that's the thing wonderful. Is like these still have like that amazing play value, even if they're not the display piece type things.
God, part of me is like, I should be an adult and not have another drink, but it's like, oh, we got 20 minutes left. I can slam one of those. So I'll be right back. You guys talk about
sounds good.
Probably Star Wars or Legos, because that seems to be the theme tonight.
Okay, cool.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about that wasn't Star Wars or Legos?
Let's have a chat appreciation time, so when he edits the show.
Oh, like, chat appreciation time. Chat is great. Chat is incredibly... You should buy Chad's book. Books.
Oh, really do. Yeah. I almost had Land of Glass, but by his video.
I wish we had an Amazon affiliate link so that you could give Chad even more money by buying his books on Amazon.
Yeah, no, man, like the dude has written, I mean, he's written more than two books, but two books that he's published, and it's just like, it's everything you said in your intro where it's like, hey, like I want to create and you want to create, but he's actually doing it, you know?
And you can do it too.
It's like, so much respect.
You can do it too. It's inspiring in that way.
Yeah. And, you know, we've done this podcast for 230 episodes, and sure, so most of the time episodes. It's like, hey, we read comics and stuff, but I'm proud of that,
I'm back.
Welcome back, Chad. Doing,
and that's why the Mon Calamari are my favorite Star Wars race.
No, fair enough. You raised some good points.
Alex, what'd you get for Christmas?
I got... how did you know? That was amazing. Wow. Goosebumps. I got a 100-inch projector screen. So I bought a projector, like, a year ago. But I didn't get a screen for it, so it was just kind of like in my room. But my room has like red and blue walls, so it doesn't really work, and they're weirdly angular. So it's kind of like, oh, I can project like if I'm watching a Simpsons episode, everyone's red. It's like, oh, that's pretty neat. But My parents got me a projector, and my mom wasn't quite sure what the sizing was, so she was like, I'm going to get you a 165-inch one or a 100-inch one. That's what she was saying to my dad for me. And it's a 100-inch one, and it's, like, taller than my room. and I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it, but it's kind of neat. I set it up as a second monitor, and that was fun to do for a little bit. But
don't poke it with a knife.
Yeah. Right? Well, actually, if I do, I could get two screens.
Do you have a backyard?
I do. Yeah, so I was thinking like a movie night thing would be cool.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's just like the middle of the winter now.
Well, yeah, I guess that's fair. But like in the summer, just like, and in non-COVID times also, but like just in the summer, just like setting up your 100-inch projector screen in the backyard and like having, you know, your friends over and just like chilling and like watching a movie on that in your backyard sounds amazing.
I will play the waiting game when we watch Rogue One in the backyard. It'll be good. And then I don't know, after Christmas, I was like looking and I've been thinking about it for a while, at least 2 weeks. Then I bought myself an Oculus.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, I meant to ask you that. Do you have a means to hook it up to your computer?
Yeah. I bought a cord from Amazon.
Oh, thank good. Okay. Good. VR chat does not, VR chat's not optimized well at all, like ever. So that is going to make your life easier as far as going to certain areas.
Cool. I'm not sure how to load it from my computer because I have it on my headset, but I'm guessing I'd have to download it on Steam.
Probably
play or what have you. But I'm not there yet. I don't know. That's tomorrow's problem.
Yeah, we have so many fun places to sit because I told Cameron that you got it, and it's sort of just like, okay, time to get that starter playlist. Guess who's gonna go see buff Pokemon that are creepy to look at?
Oh, that Togepi scares me.
And then I want to take you to the Tumor Zoo.
Wow,
because that place is amusing.
This is the most traveling I've done in this year. So
honestly,
cool.
You know what I want to do is take you to the pool table area. Because me and Cameron played a game of pool last week, and it legitimately felt like we were in the same room playing pool. And it was kind of jank, and you had the video game stuff, but like once you got past that, it was like being just hanging out with my friend Cameron in a bar shooting a game of pool. It was awesome. It felt so good, and we've talked about this on our other podcast, but just like using VR chat as a way to maintain social interaction during COVID-19 and get enough of that feeling is really been nice.
That's awesome. And even like if it wasn't COVID-19, like, you know, people living in different parts of the country or like different countries, it's like it seems like a perfect thing. That's one of the big reasons I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get it. But so far I've just been playing Beat Saber, and I oh my gosh, it's just so much fun. It like scratches that Guitar Hero itch. But it's like whenever there's like two notes on the side and you slice through them, I just feel so powerful. It's just like, wow, I can do anything.
My mom really loves it because me and my brother got her that for Christmas. And the first day she played it, she said she like was sore the next day and couldn't play it. And so she got back on it today again and apparently got a pretty good workout in listening to KDA.
Yeah, I just did the KDA song today. It was also the Crab Brave song that I remember watching
years
ago was in it. So that was, it's actually a pretty hard song, and it was like, wow, this is wonderful. And then my brothers were playing a lot of Super Hot and really liking
Super
it.
Super Hot's really fun.
Super Hot is fun outside of VR, and that is like if I ever buy a VR headset, that is like the thing I want to play on it is Super Hot.
Yeah.
I feel like the coolest I've ever felt in a video game is playing Super Hot because it was I'm legitimately Neo in the Matrix.
Well, it's funny because like my brother's been playing it, and he just looks so stupid because he has his headset on, and he's like lying on the ground, and he's like moving his hands.
Dude, the thing that really made the like original Super Hot work for me was that at the end of every level, they show it to you. They show you what you did, like actually, you know, at the speed of like a normal FPS game, and you just it looks so fucking cool.
Is that on VR?
I don't know. I don't remember
that being on VR
version. But on the Super Hot, the main release of it, it was just so amazing. Like every time you finish a mission, you just watch the sped up version of it. And you're like, holy shit, I'm so cool, doing things that like I could never do in a normal FPS. But
it all feels so natural, right? Like
that game is
like,
so good.
I only played the demo thing, and then I bought it. My brother's been hogging it, but it's like there's one where you take a gun and you shoot it at someone, and they drop their gun, and you pick up their gun, and you shoot these other two guys, and you're just like, and you're like dodging a bullet. It's just, I don't know if I've ever experienced a game that's been a better fit for a console than than Super Hot is for VR, where it's just like this is fantastic.
And it's such a unique puzzle game because there's like always so much going on, and it's like it's not like a puzzle game like, you know, Portal or something in that vein, or even like, you know, Braid or a platformer kind of puzzle where you know, it's the kind of thing where you just stare at it. Like, it's Super Hot, there's always like so much going on, and there's so many ways that you can like interact with the environment and figure it's I love that game so much. I love the style of it too. It like the like red people and against the white background and all of the like the way that like the enemies shatter. It's there's nothing I don't like about Super Hot, honestly. That game is
phenomenal. My mom played a level. My brother took her through, and she just like took off her headset, and it was just like shook that these people were trying to kill her. It was like, aw.
I remember when my brother first got VR, and we had our parents play Super Hot, and then our neighbor that I play ping pong with, and like everyone was just flabbergasted that like that was a thing we could do now. It was, and even I was too. And it's like I have somewhat my finger on the pulse for video games, right? Like, and I was just like, holy shit, this is what they were talking about. It is way better than anybody described it to me.
Well, and it's wild because like I kind of feel similar about Beat Saber, where like you're in it and I'm like, this is like the best rhythm game I've ever played. It's just like, it's so great because you're like surrounded all by this like techno neon sort of future and this lights and stuff, and you're just like playing, and it feels, it's one of those things where like when I'm playing Guitar Hero, I'm kind of thinking of the notes, but this one I'm just kind of like, it kind of just feels like you're just doing it, and it feels natural, and you move into the beat, and Super Hot's so good. And then I'm like, are there any other VR games that come close to this in terms of like feeling or in terms of optimization or in terms of thing? I've heard that Half-Life Alyx is
apparently really good, and then Boneworks is really good. My brother's played both of those through multiple times.
There's another game that people say, well, there's Astro's Playroom, but that's only on, or Astrobot, or I don't remember, but it was the PS4 game that people say is really good. And the other one that I would really love to play is, it's like the medieval game where you play as a mouse.
Oh, Moss.
Which Moss is apparently really, really good. But it's just wild to think that, like, it felt like, you know, 20, and I've never been in a place where, like, I could, like, get VR, and so I've never, I mean, I've used it before, but I've never owned it, so I've never spent, like, a ton of time with it.
Yeah.
But it's wild to think that, like, 2 years ago when, like, all of those games were coming, which is when, like, a lot of those games came out, it felt like, there was, like, a moment where it really felt like, okay, they're actually figuring out VR. And, you know, this generation of consoles, there's no VR headsets that are compatible with the consoles. And, you know, it feels like VR is, VR in games is kind of like on hold in a weird way. Because even all the, like, I guess there was Half-Life Alyx, but like all the games that you're talking about are games that are a couple years old at this point.
Yeah.
And there's like no new VR game.
Like, I've known about Beat Saber for like, it feels like at least 5 years.
Well, because Beat Saber existed outside of VR, I think.
Oh, did
I might be wrong about that. I might be making myself a very fool, but I think Beat Saber started as a while. Whatever the PlayStation Motion controls, whatever that was. PS Move, yeah. I think it started as a PS Move game and then became a VR game and really got like popular and successful in VR.
Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like having Super Hot, Beat Saber, and then VR Chat, because I'm very excited for VR Chat because of the stories that, you know, Chad and Cameron talk about, but it's just like, I feel like as much as that's only, like, you know, 2 games, 3 games, I feel like that's almost enough for what a VR headset is. Like, you know, you just have, like, I feel like Super Hot has so much replayability, Beat Saber's replayability, VR Chat, you never know what's going on. It's like, I don't think there's any other system where you can be like, oh, there's 3 games that are, like, you know, taking up all your time, and that's enough. But
I think,
again, it's been 2 days.
I feel like all the other systems are like that, where there's, but VR has that aspect of like, this isn't, it's not like anything you've played before, right? Because like, you know, every like, Breath of the Wild on the Nintendo Switch is like, you know, everyone loves it. It's an amazing stuff. I haven't played it, but
the
like,
first level of that is in VR Chat, by the way. Someone ported it over.
Of course it is. But it's like everyone talks about it. It's a game that like people could like sink hours and hours and hours into. But I guess it's not quite the same as VR, because it's like at the end of the day, for, you know, for everything that people say about that game doing new things, like a lot of it is still rooted in, you know, classic Zelda games and contemporary open world things. So it's not like blowing your mind in the way that those games
like,
were.
I love Breath of the Wild, but it was never a game. I don't think I've had experience with like a game other than like, you know, like an Apex or Overwatch where I'm playing it a lot anyway. but a game where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to play this for a long, long time. And it's just like when you get that, it's just so easy to put the goggles on and it does feel like you're like,
yeah,
nice little transport to another thing.
My favorite, it's funny because I look at some of my like favorite more active gameplay elements of VR chat, right? And like taken by themselves, if you remove the headset, they would be very mediocre or bad games because there's not a lot there and the production values aren't always good. But when you have that headset on and you're physically moving to, you know, pull the bowstring back or pointing a gun at a, you know, Galaga style like enemy that's flying at you and shooting it out of the sky, like that, it just it changes the game so hard, and it, you don't even care anymore that like the balance is weird and the sound effects aren't great. Like none of that stuff matters because the rest of the immersion is so good and it's so different, and it is crazy. I can't fucking get over it. Like I'm trying to save these areas now that I've been playing more, and because I want to show them to you, Alex, and they're really really cool despite being like kind of mediocre games, but because of the way you interact with them, it just is different.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's a shame it's not more widely adopted, but I think, I mean, there definitely is the barrier to entry, but I think the Quest 2 is like cheaper than any console, any next-gen console, so it's kind of
the same price as the Switch.
US. Yeah.
Which is like...
But a Switch has Nintendo Labo.
Which is also a new and different way to play video games.
It's true. You could play Breath of the Wild in VR, actually.
We're at 54 minutes. I'm willing to go like 5 or 10 over. I would like to just keep talking for a while because this is fun, but also I have to edit this tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, when you're ready for a hard stop, Chad, just like...
Okay. Just hard stop.
Do you guys do any of the New Year's resolution shit? Like, is that... I know you mentioned it kind of on Twitter, Jean-Luc.
I did, yeah. I don't know. Alex, do you do it? I don't, like, I used to engage with it. Like, I used to, like, be like,
yeah,
you know, do they're like, oh, I'm going to, you know, this is like, I'm going to watch movies, this X number of movies and read X number of books. And this is the way I'm going to change myself. But it's always, it's sort of fallen to the wayside as I feel myself falling deeper and deeper into the void. So
that's what
the problem. A lot of people start these resolutions and they don't start resolutions that are feasible, and so when it doesn't work,
yeah,
they're like upset, right? Because of course you are. Like you're like, oh, yeah. I have this goal to lose this much weight or do this or this or this. But it's really hard to quantify something like that. Like, yeah, there's a lot of different ways to lose weight, but they hinge upon so many different factors and like how you live your life and how much time you have to devote to cooking and exercising. Yeah. And so to anybody listening, like if you're gonna start a goal, start small, but make it something you can achieve. The most important thing in any goal is like, can you actually do it? And I think that's the problem is people start these goals that they literally cannot achieve because they don't think, you know, that extra 30 seconds to like, can I actually do this? Is this something I can fit in my day every day? Because the odds are the answer is no. Like our days are fucking complicated and booked. Like we're very sad, tired people.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like, for me, I think when I was in high school, maybe early university, I was like, oh, like New Year's resolution, I'm going to, I don't know, like write 1,000 words a day because I'm writing for WeTheNerdy.com and we're going places, kids.
Remember when you believed that? I don't know if you ever believed that.
Hey, all I see is orange, so good. But for this year, like, I mean, I haven't done a resolution in years, but for this year, my resolution or thing is it's to celebrate the good things when they happen in life. Like in terms of like, accomplishments, because I feel like for me this year, like I got a full-time job for the first time, like things happen where it was, you know, if I look at the start of the year, I'm like, oh, that's cool, like, and I think what I do is I achieve something and then I'm sad, like I'm then that's the new normal and I'm not really appreciating that I achieved that thing and it's on to the next thing. So I think just like taking the time to be like, oh, like celebrating, like, oh shit, like I don't know, my Roller Coaster Tycoon tweet got 1,000
Yeah, you should
likes.
Be excited, dude. Awesome. Your shit rocks. Like, not
yeah,
only
but,
is it,
but I feel like
it is the new normal in some ways, but like that's like you're living it. But like, yeah, you're doing cool shit. I mean, you're selling a product, but like it's cool. You know, it's like it's the same thing as like, you know, chat, like the writing and the music and stuff. Like, it's cool. Like I'm more saying this, like you should absolutely like celebrate that because it's really awesome.
Yeah. And I think even like the small things.
It feels good to excel at your job.
No. Yeah, it's like it's not even like I don't know. It's just like I feel like there are things in days where, like, I don't know, you do something good. It doesn't have to be, like, monumental, but I think just celebrating these things might make it a better year. But I don't know. I guess we'll see what 2021 brings.
Well, like,
but it does feel good to accelerate.
Go ahead. If we look at this podcast, right? If we had a goal, like, you know, I want more people to listen to this podcast. That's my goal. That's a shitty goal because it doesn't involve, like, how you would do that. You can't do that. You have to be like, okay, my goal is to buy advertising and spend X amount. You know, like, you have to scale it back to something you can physically do and then measure and then, like, achieve, right? Like, that's the whole point. And I don't have, like, any major goals for 2021. I don't typically do that. Like, if I do is maybe, like, use the exercise bike for an hour a week. You know, 3 20-minute sessions, which is super easy.
Yeah. You know what? Here's my goal. I'm doing one Twitter post on the Comics Podcast Twitter a day.
There you go.
Instead of my Twitter. So if you stop seeing me posting about comics on my Twitter.
Hey, a tweet is a tweet, dude.
Posting
we'll
is posting.
It. Oh, that's
wonderful. That's my resolution. I'm already two posts. You know, like, well, I'm only one post behind, but I'll do
okay,
two.
Okay, well, that's a I'll good do start. You're doing better than most people do on the
three,
resolution.
I'll do three posts tomorrow.
Why not do it
well,
right now?
Well, because I feel like 10:15 p.m. at night is a bad time for impressions. Well, you know what? Maybe I will tweet about it because to air a small grievance, we were having such a good conversation that I missed an eBay listing for a Lego set that I wanted. That
oh,
was
no.
A good deal. And I was like so engrossed in the conversation that I forgot to check it. But anyway, continue.
It's funny. Like, you mentioned writing 1,000 words a day, Alex. And like, when I'm working on a book, that literally is my goal, is to write 1,000 words a day until the book is done. The current novel, I've really not achieved that. It's mostly been like 700 to 900 is the kind of the average. I'm not upset by that, though, because for one thing, it's not going to be a very long book. Like, the most it will be like 75,000 words on the first draft. And so it's not a big deal. Like, I'm still making progress every day, and that matters more than this arbitrary metric I try to assign myself. And it's working for me, right? Like, I'm having a lot of fun with this. It's coming along pretty well. It's fucking weird and messy as shit, but I'm enjoying the process, and that's more important than really anything else, because if you're not enjoying something, you probably shouldn't do it, especially if it's a hobby. So, I don't know. That's my, like, 2 cents, and it's funny because some of the stuff I'm regurgitating is, like, things the quality department where I work will talk about when it's, like, how to set up a good department goal so you can appease senior leadership. Yuck, 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 you know? And I'm like, fuck you, Tim, you corporate bastard. Also, everything you say is right.
It is true. Yeah.
So I heard most of that, but you guys sound like robots to me right now, and I can understand you. I just want everyone to know how amusing it is. So.
You did cut out a little bit for us, but I assume because we're recording locally, all the problem be...
It'll be fine.
We'll be okay. We'll be sorted out by our brilliant producer.
Also, I want to touch on this. I feel bad I keep talking a lot, but the booze is helping. One of my things for 2020 was I really wanted to figure out that deathcore sound. I started with a vocal coach, and there were so many ups and downs with that. And literally, I think it was 3 days before the new year rolled over, it clicked, and I can do it now. And I'm so fucking happy.
Do it right now.
It doesn't sound great through this microphone, because this microphone's a piece of shit.
That does sound good.
And it's
wait a minute. Whoa. You guys sounded like robots that whole time, and then Chad did his growl, and you guys sound normal. Holy fuck, that is powerful.
Chad has unleashed some magic onto the world.
Dude, I was down in my basement today practicing to Whitechapel, which was a kind of a clusterfuck, but also so fucking fun. I'm just like, oh my god, I can do it.
That's awesome.
That's wonderful.
So
as the kids say, poggers.
Yeah, expect like a vocal cover to Doom Woods at some point within the next 2 weeks. I feel like I know that song theoretically enough to maybe do it, so.
tis wonderful.
So that means we have to start a band, by the way. We talked about that a couple times last year.
Oh, great.
You tweeted, you tweeted a response to John when we were talking about, you know, the New Year's resolution, and John liked the tweet, and I liked the tweet, which means contractually.
Yeah.
That's what liking tweets means.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of bands in the world.
The thing is like, we can make it. It doesn't have to be good and no one has to like it. I feel like the act of making things typically makes me happy and it makes other people happy.
Yeah.
Like you can improve your gear so much by trying out new things. I want to try out photography. I've been researching photography for this book.
Dude, photography is a lot of fun.
And I'm just like, shit, I want a cheap DSLR.
Yeah. I took honestly, one photography class my freshman year of high school, and I like took all the pictures on my phone, but it was still because I didn't realize it was a photography class. It was just called visual literacy. What? And I thought it was like about media literacy, but it,
yeah,
that's such a pretentious way to say you're doing a photography class.
Yeah, but it was a photography class. So I was woefully underprepared, but
yeah. I feel like nowadays, I mean, I'm not sure what phone Chad has, because I seem to remember him having a very old phone, but I think he might have gotten a new phone, but like...
I upgraded over the last, like, year and a half. It's not a great phone, though. The camera on it's pretty bad.
Oh, okay. Because I bought a DSLR, like, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, or like, maybe like 2.5 years, and then I was like, oh, the new iPhone just has a better camera, and like, it's easier to use, but it is kind of nice to have a DSLR and like, you know... fidget with the settings and stuff, and especially when you're doing nature
stuff.
I want
to fuck with shutter speed. You can get such cool pictures when you do that.
Yeah.
Set it for like 30 seconds and like feel like take a picture of a busy road. You get all these crazy light lines going through from the cars.
And bam, you have a new book cover.
Honestly, yeah.
You're not wrong. Like, I do have to make my own book covers.
That's the secret sauce.
That actually seems
sick.
But
yeah, no, like, it just feels right. You just get the lights going.
You can get, like, a cheap DSLR. Like, I go to a pawn shop and get one for probably, like, $100 or
$200.
Oh,
yeah,
bucks.
Probably, actually.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. But, no, it just feels good to make stuff. I don't know, even, like, it's all just to, like, share with people, which is why I think this podcast is wonderful, because it's not, like, I mean, clearly we're not being, like, I mean, sure, it'd be nice if we got, like, 1 million downloads, but also, I don't know if it'd be great if 1 million people...
Honestly, it feels great to make posts on Twitter. That's what I'll say.
Here's the thing. If 1 million people listen to this, at least some of them would try to hold me accountable to the horrible jokes I make.
No, here's the thing. If 1 million people listen to this, you would stop caring what you said, because at that point, people are giving you money.
That's like, true.
If 1 million people are listening to this, you're not worried necessarily. You're not as worried about what employers are going to think about you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Also, you know, some of us just tell our employers.
Some of us put this podcast on their resume.
That is ballsy.
Some of us put this podcast on their resume, and their boss still doesn't know what their podcast is. So
that's
pretty dodged department. A bullet. You're like in the super hot game.
Yeah, the people who hired me might know, but I don't think so, because I don't think they would have hired me if they listened to like.
Hey, you know, we did have an uptake in listeners, you know, a few weeks ago. So maybe. Have you applied to jobs recently?
No, I also took the podcast off my resume.
Oh, yeah, that's probably for the best.
Well, I rolled it into the We the Nerdy part of my resume. Like, oh, I hosted a podcast. So,
yeah. Well, I feel like it'd be a good way to. I mean, you know, our advertising budget's kind of shot this year because we got
yeah,
a big NASCAR.
What the fuck was that, by the way?
Oh yeah, you have to talk about that.
I met a guy. I went to LA earlier in this year before everything shut down, and he's a big racing guy, journalist. But they had like an EU indie league, like indie racing, because they couldn't do real one, and he was in it. And he was just like, "Hey, anybody want to be on this car?" And I was like, "Yes, the comics podcast would." And he's like, "Okay, send me a picture." And then he put it on his car, and it was like,
"Did that
okay.
not cost you any money?"
No. No.
God damn! I wish you had told me that. I sent him my band logo.
Oh, I mean, you know, I'll keep it open for that. You got to get a nice band sponsorship. But yeah, there's a nice comics podcast flavored car picture out there. We'll share it on
socials. Yeah,
John will do that. He's already tweeting good stuff. So
I'm so excited to start composing music this year because it's been a while, and I really want to start working on another album. And it's funny because I had like this really like long pretentious list of like song names. I was like, oh, I should do this as a theme. And now I'm looking at it, I'm like, you know, I want to write a song about Warhammer. Because Warhammer's dumb.
Yes.
And so I'm like, I'm probably just going to burn this list and just make whatever the fucking stupid
Dude,
shit
you
I
should,
want.
Your next album should, you should make the Warhammer album.
Well, I have a really good song idea that is kind of about putting my cat down. That's like really sad. And I'm like, okay, so that one will probably get made. weirdly, the tone of it is not sad at all, and it would involve a lot of people. I want like a large crowd chant going, so I'm gonna have to like send out like, hey, say this into a microphone to this beat, and I'm just gonna combine all of them into like one file and like have like a crowd of, you know, doing this thing, and then I'll kick myself in and.
John, we can try out for that. We can
audition
number two.
No, this will just be like, hey, just say it's largely it'll be counting to seven, or and then when you hit eight, say the word black because like you know
what are you counting down to dying? John?
You know what we should do. So I just looked this up. I'm sorry that this is a bit. You can get custom Hot Wheels made. Like commission them.
Really?
We should. Yeah. I there's like a Reddit post where there's like a bunch of there. Then there's other places. There's like there's a website. One of us should do something stupid, and we should commission the car with our logo on it.
How much does it cost?
I'm looking. I'm not finding a place like where to like
do it. I feel like it'd be cheaper if we got like four cars, though. So
let's see.
I mean, not cheaper than one car because that's not how money works. But a nice bulk in order.
I wonder. Oh, they might not actually. So this is a custom. Oh, they might not actually do commissions. Fuck.
Damn. Commissions are now closed.
Here's the thing, though.
There's got to be someone.
There's paper you can buy to like print logos on and then transfer to stuff because people do that with the Warhammer minis.
That's
all the
true.
Time.
Yeah.
And so really, it's just buy a like fucking a Hot Wheels car. Get a sheet of that paper, print it, cut it out. Putting it on's not that hard. I've seen like tutorials that for Warhammer, right? Like I feel like I could do it. Like it involves like maybe a chemical I don't own that I'd have to go buy.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. I mean, we have
apparently you can just sand off the decals that are on. I'm looking at the Reddit some of these Reddit posts.
We're in deep.
It's not that deep, but apparently this guy who's like posted one of the commissions that he made, he says that he just sands off the decals that are on there, and then I guess just uses like plastic to apply. I don't understand how that works, but he like he prints the decals, and oh wow. So I guess we could just do that, and we could get those.
Yeah, for our Patreon listeners.
No, for
our
us.
Regular listeners, you cheap fucks. Oh yeah. Well, who do you think our Patreon listeners are?
Honestly, if that would actually be kind of a fun Patreon reward, but it would probably cost more than it's actually worth. Not that we have or will have a Patreon. Comics Podcast is a podcast of the people.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to send me money, I can hit you up with my PayPal though. So,
but if one person send us money, we'll set up a Patreon. So, we're a podcast of the people for now. That's our.
We're also a podcast of the hour 12. I wonder if we should wrap up.
Yeah, we can wrap up.
Well, we did give you the power to heart stop.
Yeah, we did.
I hate to end this. I'm having a great time. Honestly, I want to keep drinking too because I'm feeling good. I gotta like vacuum. So maybe
I was going to say we could do some Patreon exclusive content off air, but I don't know.
I mean, we could literally just keep chatting. When me and Cameron finish Opinions or Chief, we usually talk for like an extra half hour.
Well, are we allowed to talk? I don't know. We'll talk about this after, or maybe we won't. I don't know if we're allowed. I normally save all my talking in the week for the podcast, so
fair.
It's going to be weird. But again, I'll stop ranting and.
Am I supposed? sorry. I should do plugs. Fuck.
Don't worry, I didn't really.
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't ready. I was looking at Twitter. I was pulling up my tweet so that I could like it from my personal account.
You know, I review my own books on Amazon, so I understand.
Exactly.
I gave Dreamscape a 5 out of 5. You should do it too.
Wait,
I would give
your Chad Stan 69. Damn.
I would give Dreamscape like 4.5 stars.
Give it 5, you bastard.
Don't like the intro, personally.
Got him. You don't like the actual book?
No.
For the afterword? That's my favorite bit.
No, I like that bit. I told that bit to people.
I actually think that bit is kind of funny. I don't like it because it makes me feel awkward, but it is like it is still a funny bit.
Okay, well, I'm ready for the show 10 now. Cool. I'm content.
You can follow us on socials. You should follow at Comics Podcast on Twitter because I'm going to do – and you should – do my one post a day. Some of the posts might just be day 279 out of 365, but there will be engagements every day. And posting an episode link does count. I'll say that. So I have one free post a week. But you should follow that on Twitter, and you should follow the Facebook page too. And maybe somebody will post there. I think Chad or Alex post the episode link every week, and so that's poggers.
I try to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I edit it, at least.
So you should follow those. You can follow us individually. I'm at Mountain Liker. Alex is at Alex Hanziak. Chad is at Anonymbit. Emily, not here. I almost forgot about her. Don't cut that. I miss Emily. But she's at mpandanata, tweeting about Midsummer these days.
Following
Emily on Twitter has been like the one thing that actually gets me to log into Twitter now, because she follows so many things and retweets so many weird things, and most of them are like extremely like LGBT positive.
Emily is a true poster.
She has
the heart of a poster.
She does once per day, at least. Sometimes twice.
Sometimes add one to three zeros at the end of that. Anyway, you should follow Emily on Twitter and listen to her other podcasts, which are Imagine Me and Yuri Kuma. Sounds like a sex thing. And the Fresh Podcast Market. And then Chad. Honestly, I don't know why we haven't done this. I should just record myself saying this part, and then we just put it at the end of every episode.
Because that would be boring, and the people would start skipping it.
That's true. We got to keep it interesting. We always got to do it in the show so that we have like that little bit of content at the end. And you can find Chad at where I said the Twitter at.
But you should follow me, because I post every Monday. I post a screenshot from VR chat from the night before.
That is true.
And they're usually really weird.
And if you want to join the comics podcast, you get exclusive early access sometimes.
That doesn't exist.
The comics podcast chat. The comics splash. Shit.
Yeah, no, but other people can't join that chat.
Well, as soon as we get a Patreon person, they can join.
Dude, could you imagine fucking Patreon tier? You can join our private group chat. That is some levels of like parasocial relationships I don't even want to think about. That's actually fucked.
For $10 a month.
So you know what else is fucked? Is I went... So the other day I posted the Dreamscape by cover art, but I turned it into a computer wallpaper, and I threw it on Fur Affinity, and I threw it on DeviantArt. And I was like, I should log into Fur Affinity and see if anybody else liked it, because it got a handful when it first went up. And the front page, there's just always so much weird porn when I log into this site.
This is why I say everyone denies...
It's called Fur Affinity.
Everyone denies this when I say that being a furry is primarily a sex thing. And they're like, no, it's not. It's about a lot of other stuff. But you log into any fucking furry page on the internet, it's all sex. It's all porn. That's what it is. That's what the culture is. I mean, there's other things, but...
Wow. It's a reindeer
is like
60-70%. Neon green hair in a dick that is like three times his size, and he's just filling up giant condoms, and like the world he's in is these giant condoms filled with his cum.
See?
And I don't know why that's a thing. And the vein in his dick looks like a leech. It's gross.
Furries like what they like, man.
It's great. No, I don't knock the furries. They're fine. They just baffle me sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I should clarify. I don't think that it's a bad thing that, like, people are into the porn they're into. Like, that furry porn is, like, some of it obviously is bad, but, like, for the most part, I don't think it's hurting anybody. So, good on you, as long as you're not fucking actual animals, which I know isn't a part of the furry
If we pre-recorded this plug, we wouldn't have got this.
See, you know what? Now I'm convinced. I gotta say it every episode. But you can find Chad's books, The Ninth Life and Dreamscape, on Amazon. You should buy them there. And you can go to followthewitch.bandcamp.com for his album, and The Land of Glass is a game on Steam, which probably is on sale.
I think it is.
The Steam sale doesn't end until the 6th, so by the time this goes up...
Where's the DLC, Chad?
Yeah, where's the DLC, you promised, motherfucker?
What the fuck?
Can you imagine if your game, like... Could you imagine if, like, your game, like... had like a Reddit page, and it was just all people yelling about how you promised DLC and it hasn't come out yet?
Dude, if that happened, that would be great, because it meant people bought it.
Yeah, that's fair, actually. I guess that's the thing. He's just like laughing all the way to the bank, baby.
Most people either snagged it from that Russian site because it got put up for free, or they got it from the Itch.io bundle. Like, we gave away like almost 9,000 copies.
Well, maybe they'll buy your next game.
You know, that's kind of the hope.
Yeah.
The land of ass.
Ooh.
A fur affinity game.
See, look. And you gave it away for a good cause. It was part of a bundle.
I'm happy about that.
Important cause, yeah. Even I didn't buy it, but that's because I got a preview that became the normal build. Let's go, baby.
I am a little upset when like the website rolls around and I have to pay to keep hosting the website and my emails and stuff. Like, I am losing money on the game.
Hey, I'm losing money on this podcast.
But are you? I pay for this podcast.
I pay the GoDaddy hosting.
That's true.
For thecomicspodcast.com.
Which you Alex and Emily I just gamble a lot on this.
Yeah, look at these motherfuckers.
I just gamble a lot on this show, but I promise I'm
look
still
at these.
Losing money.
Money saved is money earned for these two fucking deadweights.
Hey, once your Christmas gifts arrive,
he says he's like, shit, I gotta get him Christmas gifts now.
Now, well, the issue is, Chad, your Christmas gift is a pre-order that comes out in May, so you're gonna get like a July.
Nice.
And I felt kind of awkward about sending other Christmas gifts before they got it, so you guys are getting Christmas in July.
You know what? Fuck yeah. I'm going to forget you did that, too, and I'm going to be really surprised.
It's going to be one of those things that shows up, this is Poggers.
We should leave, because we're at an hour 20.
Yeah, we should.
Jean's going to be like, I already have an Ultimate Collector's Series Millennium Falcon. He's going to toss it in the garbage.
Hey, you know what? You know what, though? That shit's retired now, or it's retiring at the end of this month. I can't remember. If you sent me a sealed... UCS Millennium Falcon, that shit's gonna already be like double its retail value at that point. So
we're making capitalist.
Money. Yeah, look at me, the owner of Capital, and in this
Bam,
case, Capital
him.
Is Lego sets.
You're like the Lego Mitch McConnell.
I am not the Lego.
Wow, that might be the episode title.
That yeah.
Oh, we did it.